You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Mickey. Oh, hi. Sorry. I thought I'd muted my video.
What you doing there, Mickey?
I'm sorry. I was just, doing some things.
Oh, pleasuring your parrot, were you? I'm sorry.
I have no comment.
This is a good week for you, Mickey, because, for a couple of reasons. The first one, which we needn't spend too much time on, it being a subject fit mainly for the Parrot Room, is that, as I recall, you've never been a fan of Jeffrey Toobin's. And while I certainly don't think you're the kind of person to take pleasure in the suffering of others, even your rivals and adversaries, I can't believe that this wasn't a wonderful week for you.
Well, it wasn't the most important thing that happened this week. There's been this huge outpouring of, first there was an outpouring, people were dumping on Toobin, apparently mainly from the right, because he's obviously on CNN and is a man of the left. But also, Kevin Williamson wrote this piece about how we shouldn't dump on this guy. He just had we should have compassion for him. And Connor Friedersdorf wrote a similar thing, tweeted a similar thing.
And did they persuade you?
No. I mean, you shouldn't take pleasure in other people's suffering. You certainly shouldn't show you're taking pleasure in other people's suffering, because that
key distinction there, yeah.
But it's also bad karma, because A, he'll be back, and right. B, same thing could happen to you.
You could be right.
I think maybe it just did, but what Toobin is when is Toobin shown? I mean, I have a beef against Toobin.
What is the beef? Why don't you like Toobin? Jealousy? Okay,
No.
It's not that he's on CNN and you're just talking to me?
I'm sure that's part of it, but the main beef is that his book about Clinton, he originally asked a friend of mine, Mike Isikoff, to co-write it with him, and Isikoff said no, and then Toobin wrote his own book where he blamed Isikoff for the Clinton sex scandal on the grounds that Isikoff was just eager to write a book.
Isikoff did break the story, right? He broke the monocle.
He broke the story. Well, it was complicated. He broke the story for Newsweek. Newsweek spiked the piece, and then Drudge reported that Newsweek had spiked the piece, and then Isikoff produced the story. And then Isikoff wrote a book about it. But Toobin got a lot of things wrong, it was just a sleazy thing to do, and then he denied that he'd ever wanted to co-write it with Isikoff. And the whole thesis of Toobin's book was that, the issue of the character issue was bullshit. It was just an attempt to, let you import a lot of innuendo, talk about a lot of sexual, innuendo, and then it was mighty convenient for Toobin, because Toobin, in fact, was an adulterer himself, and nice to get that off the table. And the character issue was, of course, relevant in the sense that, at least in the sense that Clinton didn't put the kibosh on Hillary's healthcare plan until it was too late, because Hillary was pissed off at him because of Clinton's philandering. So it had a huge impact on Clinton's presidency.
That sounds a little speculative, but go ahead.
It's in Toobin's book. Toobin reports it himself. And then he says, and then Toobin says, of course, sex has nothing to do with it. Well, sex had everything to do with it. So then Toobin had a sort of long-term affair with Casey Greenfield, and she had a child. And
Jeff Greenfield's daughter?
Right. And whoever
somewhat seems younger
to
than
love.
Toobin? Not criminally so, but somewhat younger.
No, I don't think that's part of the issue.
1.5 decades, maybe.
He tried to get her to have an abortion. He denied paternity. He behaved like a total shit. It's not clear how much compassion one should show Toobin, but one should show anybody compassion.
Given how precisely you recited all this, I'm almost inclined to think that maybe you've got more reason to dislike them than you've admitted. This is a pretty, you've got a pretty good memory in this one department.
Well, my whole blog was based on attacking Dubin for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, back in the day. So, you know, there's that.
The thing that has always surprises me, I guess I'm naive, but like when people like this who are extremely productive, you know, like I envy their output, get caught up in something like this. I'm kind of surprised because I think like I had always assumed that to be that productive, you would have to have your animal impulses totally under control. But this particular scandal has made it clear what the key is. It's multitasking. You indulge your animal impulses while you are getting valuable work done.
Well, Bob, I think it's more than that. It's that serotonin increases productivity, and having a lot of affairs increases your serotonin.
Nothing.
I read a book about that once.
But actually,
The Moral Animal.
But I think pleasuring your parrot, if we might coin a new euphemism right here on the spot, actually doesn't. I think maybe it was testosterone, but there was some study found that masturbation had the opposite effect on some male biochemical as actual sex with a human being.
Huh.
Not that we're suggesting that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, one thing this has given us is a new euphemism for masturbation.
You mean pleasuring your parrot?
No. Jesus.
What?
You can figure
it
out.
Where is your, Mickey, could you show us your parrot? One of your hands, only one of your hands is visible. Show us the parrot.
What's the guy's name?
What guy?
The guy we're talking about.
Tubin? Sorry, honey, I was just Tubin. Is that what you mean? A verb?
Yes.
There's that. There's me Tubin.
Just keep it simple. Keep it simple. These people are coming up with all these puns on Tubin this, Tubin that. Keep it simple.
But
it's
Mickey,
a simple,
pleasuring
it's
your
the way it is.
Parrot would have the advantage of getting our brand out there if that became the euphemism. Think about it. I'm not asking you to commit right now. Although I may ask you to cooperate down the road in helping us get that.
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I can't believe that the simple euphemism has caught on.
Look, we'll pick up this conversation in the parrot room. Matters of greater import also took place this week. You'll agree?
Correct.
What did you think of the debate?
I thought what everybody else thought. In retrospect, the main thing I think that happened in the debate is, Kristen Welker, who was very good, brought up the issue of the Hunter Biden scandal, although Biden bizarrely brought it up first.
That was odd.
And brought up the issue of immigration. So I thought, my God, we live in a democracy again where we can discuss issues. They were well ventilated in the debate, the immigration one less so. But people discussed them, and I had the similar feeling when I saw the comedian on Saturday Night Live 2 weeks ago, got up, did a perfectly normal routine filled with racial stereotypes and non-PC language and non-PC concepts. And it was like, this is America again. It was fantastic. So it was a breath of fresh air. Just the whole debate was a breath of fresh air. I thought Trump did... I thought Trump won the debate. Some people said he didn't. I thought he might have done... He didn't slam dunk Biden. Biden was certainly not senile. But I thought Trump might have done well enough since he's within striking distance in a bunch of battleground states. He might have done well enough to make it a very close race. Biden had a couple of bizarre lapses, the most bizarre of which was, I thought, not understanding his own public option in his healthcare plan, which is certainly one or two most important things he has to offer.
Yeah, he made it sound like you only qualify for that if you would qualify for Medicaid.
Right.
And what is the truth? What is the plan? Is it the opposite?
I think the truth is that anybody who qualifies for Obamacare, if they don't like the options Obamacare offers, could get this public option.
Yeah, I think that probably went by most people.
I know, but it was a huge, if you were looking for signs of senility, that's it.
Well, there was also a certain lack of, crispness and agility, not to the point that you would call it senility, but cases where he would have been better 2 or 4 years ago, maybe. I mean, I thought another potentially costly mistake was the thing about oil where Trump said you would shut right. down the oil industry, and he says, yeah, I would transition, and then he gets into it, and like, I mean, I guess it's mainly Texas we're talking about, and that's kind of a reach for Democrats, for Biden. There's also Pennsylvania. Yeah, now I don't think Pennsylvania has nearly as much oil business per se as it did back when the brands like Quaker State and Pennzoil came into being. I suspect fracking's a bigger issue there than...
And Ohio.
And Ohio, that's...
A lot of fracking in Ohio.
Yeah, I mean... But Pennsylvania is closer to being critical than either Ohio or Texas. If Biden doesn't win Pennsylvania, he you know, that would be a bad sign.
Right, although if Trump doesn't win Ohio, that's curtains for
well,
him.
Well, Trump needs to win a few things, yeah. But so that was odd, and then they walked it back. And, you know, Van Jones on CNN right after the debate said, now that was maybe politically dicey, but that's who Joe Biden is. He's willing, he believes, he's, you know, he's got convictions, unlike Trump. 3 minutes later, the Biden camp is out there walking it back.
No, Biden, you know, he's a conventional Paul who tries to, like, make it seem like he's taking a stronger stance when he really isn't. So he says, I'm against fracking on federal lands, okay? Mm-hmm. And it sure sounds like he's against fracking, but then when it comes to the general election or when Pennsylvania becomes a key, he can say, no, I only said fracking on federal lands. Similarly, he says, we want to end fossil fuels, but no, all I really mean is end the subsidies for oil, you know? So, and he's not very agile, as you say, in terms of, making it clear in each case, giving the Clintonian he's left himself.
Though on fracking, if the most he said is he would ban it on federal land, then it is out and out lying for Trump to say you would ban fracking. Cause that's...
Well, but Biden, there are various interactions with voters where the voter says, you're gonna get rid of fracking.
Yeah.
And he says, oh yeah, yeah, we're gonna transition away from that or something. He's vague. And Kamala Harris outright says, I'm against fracking. So.
Well, yeah. Well, she was saying that before she became Bidenized. But
Bidenized. That's a good word.
Okay, you can have it.
We got Tubin. We got Bidenized. We got a lot of
pleasuring your parrot.
Linguistic innovation.
Don't forget the one that's going to get the brand out, Mickey. Pleasuring your parrot.
Anyway.
Wait. So okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say if you. Are a Biden supporter, as I am, and I think we're getting close enough to the election for you to more or less acknowledge that you're going to vote for Trump, as your Twitter feed suggests. But we can return to that question later. If you're a Biden supporter, it was repeatedly frustrating that he didn't quite have the agility. And it wouldn't have even always taken agility. I mean, one, like, prepared spiel that he could have come out there with. You know damn well Trump is going to do this thing about you've been 47 years a politician. What have you done? Okay, here's all you got to say is like, look, you keep talking as if being one of 100 senators should have allowed me to transform the world, or even being vice president should have. Well, you have been president for 4 years. For the first 2 years, you had Republican control of both the House and the Senate. You didn't give us the health care you promised us. You didn't even get your wall built, much less have Mexico pay for it, and on. Just a simple, you know, just nail it. He could have come out there with that rehearsed.
Well, Trump, a good Trump would have had an answer to that. But
which is what?
Well, not on health care. On health care, he has no answer. But I've helped put a lid on immigration, which allowed wages to rise. I've built a large chunk of, if not a wall, a big fence. My trade deals are in the process of getting supply lines away from China. We have a tariff on China, which ain't going anywhere, which is advantaging our goods and protecting American workers. I've brought back the steel industry. He can say he's done quite a bit.
Well, then just dwell
in
on
four
healthcare.
Years, and it gives him a chance to recite that litany if he was inclined to run a populist campaign, which unfortunately he isn't, because he's been listening to Jared, who wants him to try to peel away blacks and Latinos. So when the chance came up, when Biden said, "I'm for amnesty for 15 million, for 11 million illegals," Trump could have said, you know, could have laid into him and said, "That's a terrible idea." Instead, he didn't. He said, "Well, why didn't you accomplish it?" Well, that's ridiculous. So he whiffed his big moment on immigration. You can't say the media denied it. I thought they were going to prevent him from talking about it. Can't say they prevented him. It's all on him. He screwed it up himself. And the other half of his crazy plan is to, you know, the socialists under the bed, portraying the Democrats as, portraying Biden as a dangerous leftist, which is implausible. So he has these two sort of annoying, you know, campaign orientations to sort of crowd out the populist litany of achievement that he could have given in response.
Okay, then I revised my proposal. Biden then should say what I said, but confine it to healthcare, and then ask Trump a question that channels it in that direction. Like, and by the way, have the Democrats done a good ad? I remember when Trump, at the very beginning of his administration, maybe even right before inauguration, said, "Within 30 days, I will end Obamacare and replace it with something better." I hope that in swing states, that's on a commercial. But I was worried at the beginning that Trump, and I anticipated that he would exceed the bar of expectations on the civility front. I mean, he was bound to, given the first debate, and he was doing that quite spectacularly at the beginning. I do think that by the end, it's not like he became suddenly rude or anything, but he had reverted to form a little, in the sense of just being, you know, a little more obnoxious and noisy seeming and doing his standard spiel, so that by the end of the debate, I was hoping that people watching it would, if only unconsciously, think, yeah, that's the guy I'm kind of sick of, as opposed to the guy at the beginning of the debate who was not the guy you're kind of sick of.
He did a bit of that. He talked over Welker and he talked over...
A little, but I thought as time went on. And
that's true. And Biden and got more tired as... Biden got more tired as time went on, so their flaws each came to the fore. But I don't think in either one of them went over the line in that respect.
No, I don't, and that's why, you know, if you look at the betting odds, they were right where they had been at the beginning of the debate. If you look at the betting markets, and you know, I think we should take betting markets seriously. There's now so much money in those that the kind of sympathy betting you might get from Trump supporters or Biden supporters is outweighed by people who are doing this for a living and paying a lot of attention.
I've never put much stock in them. I mean, we shouldn't take the stock market seriously, which has more money in it than any place else in the world. Why should we take the betting market seriously? The stock market has huge falls, okay?
But the idea that
the stock market accurately predicts the future of the economy and isn't subject to animal spirits and irrationality seems disproven by history.
But those are different things, because for one thing, in the stock market, there's a lot of betting on what people think the stock market itself will do. And it's a much more complicated set of calculations. In other words, people bet on irrational exuberance. So when you see the discrepancy between, say, the betting market now has Trump. I should check again to see if any big news has happened, because you do see it. If the betting market moves appreciably, you can usually find the poll or the piece of news, that did it. But there's a big discrepancy between that and so you've got like Nate Silver has got Biden at like 87% chances of winning, whereas the betting markets have Biden at like 67%. That's a huge gap. And in a way, it makes sense. I mean, silver is just going by polls, and the betting markets are going by polls plus news. So you saw them react when the Hunter Biden thing broke, the emails, because they're like thinking, well, what else is on these hard drives? We're going to allow for that. And they reacted very sharply, and they've largely returned to equilibrium since then. But how do you, so you think that 20 point difference between the betting markets and Nate Silver is just the markets being wrong or what?
I don't know. I mean, it just seems I've followed the markets in the past and they've always been a bad indicator. So, you know, it's, the markets are probably, you know, not taking the polls as seriously as Nate Silver takes the polls. So that's probably the answer. But you brought up Hunter Biden. Can we talk about that?
I want to say first, as a on the polling front, there's a little bit of good news for Trump. There has been, over the, you know, last week, there's been tightening of the gap between Trump and Biden has closed by maybe a point on 587 and two on the RCP average. And Silver's estimate of probability of Biden victory has actually gone down from 88 to 87, which is even more than it sounds like, because in his model, as I understand it, the winner gets points added just with the guy leading gets points added just with the passage of time. So if the polls stayed exactly where they are from between 2 weeks out of the election, 1 week, then Biden's chances of going up in this model, of winning in this model would rise because there's less time for turbulence, right? So when they actually drop by even a point, as they have from 88 to 87, that means there's really been a non-trivial,
there's been a little tightening in, especially in the battleground states, but, it, you know, it's gotta go a little faster, I think, but there's time for that.
But I do think, by way of transitioning to Hunter Biden, after the debate last night, my sense is the main hope I see for Trump is giving this story legs. I would expect them to start putting more and more of their chips on the Hunter Biden emails. Cause I don't, unless the polls are just significantly further off than they were last time, I don't see an obvious candidate for changing the race here.
Yeah. Well, I think the mainstream blockade of the story sort of at least partially failed, because here we were discussing it last night. I thought Biden's answers were not adequate. He didn't, he didn't say the emails weren't authentic. It's a totally bizarre story because the case that the emails are authentic has gotten quite strong. You know, we have another guy who's on the chain, Mr. Bobulinski. Is that his name? And wasn't he a pitcher
for
the Angels?
It's like Bobulinski. There was somebody named Bobulinski once.
Yeah, he pitched a no-hitter for the Angels.
But this is not him. This is a guy whose last name is Bobulinski.
And my brother, I think my brother was scheduled to go to that game, and my parents didn't let him, and he's never forgiven them for the Bobulinski no-hitter.
See, many families have dysfunction. You act as if it's only the Bidens. Many American families are troubled, Mickey.
By the way,
a serious note of sympathy, one thing I just learned, and I think this is actually true, I didn't realize Hunter Biden was in the car accident with his where his mother and sister were killed when he was a child, and he was seriously injured. Yeah,
I forgot that. But anyway, the actual emails themselves are getting sort of reinforcement. Although anyway, but the provenance of them seems so bizarre. The provenance reeks, seems like a disinformation campaign. That this laptop would be in Delaware. You have this laptop that has all these secrets on them, and you leave them in a shop and don't pick them up. So it sounds like the story that would be concocted by people that wanted to introduce these emails into the public domain, but the emails themselves don't seem phony. And no, you know, there are ways to check. Yes, there's no metadata on them. That's very troubling. I don't know quite what Giuliani's excuse is for that, but there are other ways to verify them or debunk them. If you're a reporter who wanted to debunk them, you could talk to other guys who are on the email chain who said, yeah, that's my email, but I don't remember Hunter Biden ever saying that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And nobody said that. Okay. In fact, the guy has come forward and said, I'm on the email chain, and yes, Hunter Biden did say that. One more thing, that it's deeply troubling because, as Jeffrey Goldberg said, we have one decent guy running and one not decent guy. Vote for the decent guy. Vote for Biden. But if the gravamen of this charge is true, Biden's not such a decent guy. He's a guy who lets people basically give him, you know, people who have interest in important interests in the government, like China, give him money. They give money to his son, and the son spends it on, gives it to him. So that's corrupt in a way that would be shocking to me as who's followed Biden for years.
Let's drill down on this, because I do think conceivably the MSM lockdown on this story could wind up hurting Biden. If like a couple of, you know, if suddenly attention is brought to bear on this, and now I'm assuming that nothing else big comes out. Now, they say they've got a ton of stuff and more is going to come out. But I got to say, if they've got much, they better get it out. A third of the voters have voted. And I was thinking, well, they might be saving it for the debate and try to lure Biden into denying something that they could then show was in fact the case. Maybe, but, and I see the case for dripping things out one at a time. I get that. But I would think, you know, and I've actually been listening to Rudy Giuliani rant on Steve Bannon's podcast about how much he's got on this and just be dishonest, more than I had thought even Giuliani was capable of. I mean, he the way he characterizes the emails we've actually seen as being grounds for indicting and convicting Biden for, breaking the law, are just so over the top. But I do think it might almost be better for Biden, again, assuming there's not more there, for people to take a good look at these and explain that, you know, as I understand it, there's nothing here that's a huge deal. And let me try to make that case on China, and you correct me if I'm wrong. So now last week, when we talked, I had read the Ukraine email, and by the way, interesting thing on that. I think if you read that, I guess I'll get back to Ukraine. I mean, that seems to me clearly a nothing burger. As for the China email, and that story seems potentially richer from Trump's point of view, depending on what else may be out there, what else Bobulinski may say. Still, the key email seems to be this one where they're breaking down the envisioned equity split for some thing they're going to do, and there's this phrase. Okay, Hunter is going to get 10. That's Hunter. And then it says 10 held by H for the big guy, ? Now, Bobulinski has confirmed that the big guy is Biden, okay? But two things. This is the line items. Yeah.
And I think, more importantly, you know, we thought these emails might be frauds, but I think he somehow provided the Wall Street Journal with independent confirmation. I'm not sure, but it sure looked like that.
My theory is the emails we've seen so far are not frauds. There was a genuine, you know, I think it was a hack. I don't buy the repairman story. I think they got this repairman they handed him a hard drive and said, can you tell this story? And did God knows what else? But I think it was a hack. I don't know. Could have been foreigners, but I don't assume that. I just think it was a hack. I think the emails we've seen so far are authentic. It's not inconceivable that if the story gets legs at the last minute, they could throw and people start saying, okay, these are authentic. Then at the last minute, they could throw in an email. That's not authentic. That's not inconceivable. But anyway, I'm taking this email, the emails we've seen as.
Okay.
Legit.
Sorry. I just wanted to interject that. Go ahead.
Okay. So, there's these line items, 10 for him, 10 for him, 10 for him. And then 10 held for H, 10 held by H. For the big guy, ? Okay, first of all, the fact that that's the only line item with a question mark suggests to me that Joe Biden had not signed off on this, right? I mean, everyone, and, you know, it's the only thing with a question mark. So, now, it clearly was part of the conversation. So presumably Hunter had suggested it. I would say two things about that. First of all, in situations like this, people have been known to say, well, I need to cut so-and-so in, and that way they get more money, and they may or may not cut them in. There's that. There's also the fact that apparently this never actually happened. Okay, so we have no evidence that Joe Biden agreed to do anything, and all the evidence suggests that this split never happened. The only actual equity split I've seen anything about involving Hunter in China was 10%. He got 10, not 20%, as this would imply, and I think that was a different thing anyway. So, but finally, the most important thing of all, okay, when you dropped this email on me last week, and I hadn't seen it, I thought we were talking about a time when Biden was vice president. This is 2017. There would be nothing illegal about him being part of an equity split. Now, granted, if they covered it up in a way that led to income tax evasion, yes. But the idea that Biden would do that at exactly the point where he's making millions a year because he's no longer vice president and he's getting speaking fees and book deals seems to me implausible. So, A, there's no evidence this happened. B, it wouldn't be illegal. C, there's no evidence that Biden ever signed off. I mean, what? You see something more deeply incriminating here?
Yes. The Biden's safe space is to say, I never knew any of this. This was Hunter fantasizing. It's not my responsibility. We're not electing Hunter. So, you know, I think that would be a pretty complete defense. But there is evidence that he was involved. This guy is now testifying. That's evidence, oral evidence, not hard physical evidence. This guy, is Bobulinski. Do we have his name right?
Is that really his name? Yeah, no, I think it actually is something like Bobilinsky,
This guy says he met with Biden at the Beverly Hotel. I don't know what the Beverly Hotel was. It must be the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Met with Joe?
Or could be the Beverly Hilton Hotel. There are a bunch of... He met with Joe, and Joe was familiar with the deal. Okay, so that's evidence. There is this text that says, whatever you do, don't discuss Joe in emails. Okay, so they would quite rightly not want to put his participation in an email, which would be hard evidence, precisely for that reason.
Evidence of what? Evidence of what wrongdoing? Evidence of what illegal thing?
Well, evidence that he knew that this deal was happening, and also that he, you know, that
but
he
what's
might
illegal
get a cut
about
out of
the
it.
Deal, or even if he participated?
It's not
in
illegal.
It.
It's okay. Corrupt.
Well,
what's
look,
corrupt, what corrupt doesn't it, have to be illegal.
It's corrupt. It's
if it would be illegal for Joe Biden to take a job where he didn't do much work and got paid $10 million a year by the government of China, wouldn't be illegal. I agree.
Right.
But it would be incredibly scandalous. He would never admit to that, and he couldn't run for president.
Well, was it scandalous for Hillary to get $250,000 or whatever from Goldman Sachs for delivering speeches? Same thing. They want to have her in their good
Except
graces.
Goldman Sachs is not a foreign government that's our major rival in the world.
I'll bet if look at her... My point is,
it was corrupt, and if you remember, she didn't win. So, yeah, it was corrupt.
Okay, so my point is...
This would be even more corrupt. So, and the way the revolving door works, which is the engine of the swamp, is I know that after I finish my government service, this corporate interest or this foreign interest is going to take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter, you know, I've put this in an email to you, it doesn't matter if they pay you off before you take office, or while you take office, or if they pay you off after you take office, which right. This would be, it's corrupt. It's the revolving door. It's not illegal.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's illegal.
Let me just say.
You know, it stinks to high heaven if true.
Okay. The word corrupt is used in two ways. Sometimes to mean illegal stuff, like prosecute. If you're running for district attorney, you say, I will root out corruption, meaning illegal corruption.
Right.
Sometimes it's used more broadly. I'm fine with using it either way. I would just say that the way you are using it, and I don't doubt that Biden did lots of stuff I don't approve of, the average politician does, or certainly many politicians do, to be guilty of corruption in the sense that you're using it is almost standard procedure for politicians. It's unfortunate. And how far it goes, it might go so far that it distinguishes Biden from others. My point is just that, it's like, it's the swamp. And Trump acted as if he was going to drain the swamp. But of course, Trump is if anything more corrupt than the norm.
Right.
And
but
so, but, I mean, look, you know, the, yeah, go ahead.
The point was that Biden was running as a decent guy, and he's the guy who took Amtrak every day. He's blue collar Joe. And it's shocking to me if his level of corruption is even a tenth of what Trump's level of corruption is. Okay. That just, if he is corrupt as well as Trump, that hurts him more than Trump because he is running as the decent guy. Trump is not running as the non-corrupt guy. Trump is running as the strong guy.
No, as a political matter, it would definitely hurt. I mean, we know everything about Trump. It's either sunk in with people or it hasn't. This would be bad for Biden. To the extent that this story gets play and there's really anything to it, it would be bad. I'm just saying the documentary evidence, the emails that newspapers, that MSM is more or less ignoring, are not by themselves incriminating at all, not even suggestive of criminality. And
if you were a Russian, and if you were doing a Russian disinformation operation, you would probably tweak it a bit to make it a little more incriminating. That's one of the grounds for thinking it might be legit. And, you know, as somebody said, the press is about to flip from saying, this is a horrible Russian disinformation campaign that we have to ignore to, you know, so what if it's true? It's not, there's nothing here.
I'm already there. As always, I'm ahead of the curve. But I'm not saying there's nothing there. I'm just saying, let's be clear on what it's saying that Joe Biden is. I mean, if there's even more than we've seen, which there may well be, I would say it's like Biden is, after he was vice president, did what a whole lot of politicians do. They trade on their connections.
If the worst is true, okay, the worst scenario, Hunter arranges this thing and he gets. And keep in mind, this wasn't a small company. This was destined to be, people thought, a giant conglomerate, sort of buying up the world with making billions and billions of dollars. So they set up this separate thing that's going to sluice millions of dollars, and Hunter's going to take a cut of millions of dollars. He eventually got a payment of $5 million. So these are staggering sums. These people must be used to spending just incredible sums, or else their taxes and their ex-wives take such a chunk that they have to get $5 million if they're only going to get $100,000 out of it. Anyway, the huge sums go to Hunter. Hunter uses them to sluice them to Joe. So Joe is getting millions of dollars from China. This firm was basically synonymous with the government of China, okay? It was part of the Belt and Road Initiative. This guy would do investments where Xi wanted the investments. He was like the darling for a while. He's now has been disappeared, but arrested and disappeared. But he's, this is going to sluice millions of dollars to Joe Biden after he left office when he was planning his presidential run, okay? Entirely because the Chinese saw some reason why they wanted to curry favor with Joe Biden. So it's basically a bribe through Hunter to Joe Biden before he runs for president. That's pretty fucking bad, okay?
Well, look, if you're right and money was funneled from Hunter to Joe, presumably you have an income tax evasion case. Yeah, that's illegal if that happened.
Because
he didn't report that. So that's illegal.
Well, the deal never went through. The deal never went through, so there'd be no income to report. Hunter did get $5 million, apparently. Mm. Or this firm associated with Hunter got $5 million. And that's why this guy, Bob Bolinsky, is so pissed off, because Hunter, instead of going through his firm, the money went to Hunter directly.
Right.
And if Hunter used that to, there's this other email, a text which Giuliani flashed with Hunter complaining that he had to give half his salary to his father. If Hunter used that $5 million to pay all of Biden's expenses, why would that show up on Biden's income tax return.
You're doing a little bit of Giuliani there in the way you're characterizing
it. It's a gift from Hunter to Biden, but it, you know, I don't think Biden has to show it on his return.
First of all, that text you're referring to me, is pretty ambiguous. He's talking to what? His daughter? It's unclear. Is it a family joke? It's like, it's totally devoid of context. And Giuliani
has... The context is that he's bitter. I think the context is pretty clear that he's bitter.
Well, to me, it's... you can't conclude much of anything on the basis of that. Giuliani has a way of, like, not showing you. I mean, certainly you saw the, I don't know if we need to get into this, but the other avenue Giuliani is, oh wait, let me just close out, China. So I mean, my view is if they had, actually funneled money to Joe, we'd have income tax evasion. What we actually have is an email that pretty strongly implies that there's something here that Joe had not signed off on. We don't have any evidence he ever did sign off on it. We know it didn't happen. We're pretty sure it didn't happen. And that's where we are in terms of documentary evidence. And he was not in office at this time.
We have suggestive documentary evidence, and we have this guy, Bobulinski, who says that Hunter would often say, I have to check this with the chairman.
Yeah,
the chairman being his reference to the father. So we have a testimony from a witness, I guess, is that hearsay? I don't know, but it's evidence, whatever it is. That this guy, you know, who may be corrupt himself, I don't know, maybe he's a stooge, saying that Hunter would have to fly things by Joe. Yes, there is a question mark because they were hashing it out. Of course there's going to be a question mark. How should we arrange this payment? I mean, apparently it took them 2 years to figure out how to divide this payment. It's insane.
Well, I haven't seen the Bobulinski, the actual text of the Bobulinski deposition. I gather one thing he didn't say is Joe Biden had signed off on this deal. What is it? What is the document?
It's
an open letter or what?
Yeah.
You said he's
a sworn affidavit.
You said he's testifying. Is he in the process of?
He's talking to Congress and then he claims he's going to talk to the FBI, I think.
Talking to Congress behind closed doors today.
Yeah, today.
So then the Republicans in Congress are going to try to make this public?
I assume they'll figure out some way to get it out, yeah. But, anyway, I think that's the posture. But if the worst comes to worst, it's a bad scandal. All I'm saying is, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, yeah, if worse comes to worse, it's a bad scandal by definition.
I wanted to get out all before the election because to me the bad outcome would be, I mean, suppose Biden wins, okay? I would like the Republicans to spend the next year or, figuring out what was wrong with Trump, what they did wrong, i.e. they had no healthcare plan, they've run for too long on the old Reagan plan of tax cuts, get rid of the tax cuts, figure out something else to do. Go, you know, obviously I want them to become a populist party that also has a healthcare plan that believes in affirmative state action to help people. Mm-hmm. I would like a substantive dialogue. What if this isn't hashed out now, they're going to spend the next year talking about this and trying to raise this and saying, oh, Biden was illegitimately elected because we didn't get to bring up this. It's going to be like Benghazi all over again. Okay.
Well, it's going to be more like Russiagate, the way the Democrats, rather than blame Hillary, blamed Russian.
Right. And so it's a bad thing. So we want to get it out all now and let the people vote on it. And then it's been processed. And the voters have decided we don't care about it that much or we do care about it that much. Okay. But get it all out. I would say it's almost in the Democrats' interest to get it all out because then they won't have this Russiagate thing hanging over their heads.
So
they really think they're going to win.
So quickly on Ukraine, just because, there's something I wanted to add to last week. So the Ukraine email, which started all this, is this what is he? He's a Burisma. That's the name of the company, right? He's a Burisma official who emails Hunter thanking him for arranging something with Hunter's father. First of all, I just wanted to say this. Something, the email's a little more ambiguous than I had thought, potentially. I mean, it's in such broken English that you have to be a little cautious in interpreting it in general. But he says, to Hunter, thank you for inviting me to D.C. and giving an opportunity, he means giving me an opportunity, to meet your father and spent, he means spend, some time together. So, I mean, in principle, he could mean giving me the opportunity to meet your father and spend some time together with you. That's not crazy that he had lunch with Hunter, then shook Joe's hand. I mean, that's just an example, it seems to me, of how...
And he could be trying to nail down Hunter to a promise that Hunter never really made, too. So it's ambiguous on many counts, you know. Well, you know, it's...
Oh, is this before the meeting? This isn't before the alleged meeting, is it? It's after, right? It's after.
Is it after? Okay.
Yeah, because he also says in the email, maybe we could get together for coffee as I head to the airport or something.
Okay. If it's after, you're right, then my ambiguity... But it's ambiguous, yes. But the point of it, you know... As we said, I don't buy this idea that Biden got the prosecutor fired to help his son. The point is that his son was on the board of Burisma, this corrupt company. Biden shouldn't have let that happen. That is inherently corrupt. His son's getting money to purely because of the Biden name and the perception that he can influence his father, even if it's not real.
I agree.
Not purely for that reason, but
I agree.
Largely for that reason.
I agree that Hunter shouldn't have been working for Burisma, but I would say that the defense of Joe Biden is even stronger than you said. It's not just that he didn't help Burisma, it's that he actually did something that hurt Burisma, as I understand it. So I went back and read a good piece that you would like in The Intercept by Ryan Grimm from a couple of years ago about what a sleaze Hunter Biden is, among other things. In fact, the very end of the piece is like, this is corruption, because he agrees with you that if you're trading on your name, even if there's no quid pro quo and it's not illegal, it's corrupt. So you would love the piece, but one thing he says in there, and he is no defender of Hunter's or Joe's, is that the prosecutor that Biden had fired not only was not actively prosecuting Burisma, he had either suspended or terminated the investigation that had been going on and had given Burisma some letter of approval that they really wanted. Like, I don't know, signifying that he had looked into them, they hadn't done anything wrong. This prosecutor was pro-Burisma in that sense and was fired under Biden's pressure, okay?
It's very hard to tell. It's the Ukraine. They do these feints. They say they're prosecuting when they don't prosecute. I don't think the new prosecutor went after Burisma either. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they now have, Preet Bharara or something. It's not like they have Rudy Giuliani. It's not like they have a serious prosecutor on their case. And I did see some quote in the main, in a respectable source when Chokin was fired saying, well, we're from a Burisma executive saying we're breathing a sigh of relief. That could be bullshit too. You just don't know. But the point is the international community wanted this guy out. They thought he was a corrupt prosecutor. Biden was doing their bidding. But, and the other exculpatory thing, which I have to say, is it was very important, since Ukraine depends on the United States to stand up to Russia, there was an independent thing that Hunter bought, which is the seal of approval of the United States, which did not necessarily mean, I guess, in theory, that he was influencing his father. It was just sort of the approval of a big American family, okay? Mm-hmm. But still, it's still sleazy.
So. Yeah, I don't know the territory in Ukraine. I just mentioned that one thing because Ryan Grimm clearly is not carrying water for the Bidens, and he's a good reporter. And even he says, actually, if anything, Biden hurt.
The,
Burisma.
The other thing that's interesting to me is the way the press has handled this. And can I give you my three models of the how scandals get into the press?
Is this a newsletter in the making?
It's a newsletter in the making. Yes,
good but guess on so, my part, isn't it?
It might be slightly boring, so you be the judge. It might not make it into being the top item in a newsletter, but I'm switching my newsletter. They want a lot of items, so that means they're going to get a little boring items. So this might be
who
one
is
of
they?
Them.
Your overlords at Substack?
Well, Substack in general, they want, instead of producing like one newsletter with three items, they want three newsletters with one item, okay?
Yeah, we should discuss newsletter philosophy in the parrot room because I have a decision to make there too. But
anyway, okay.
So
but anyway,
plug the newsletter. It's called what's it called, Mickey?
It's called Kaus Files. It's on Substack. You can Google it. It's there. Or you can go to the top of my Twitter feed. Anyway, the old model, which John Alter invoked in a debate with me, was that basically scandals bubble up. The mainstream news finds out about it, but they're the gatekeepers, and they decide, is this a good scandal or not? If they decide it's not worth it to be a scandal, and Alter gives the example of before the election, they got a tip that George H.W. Bush had gunned down some civilians during World War II, okay? They decided there wasn't enough evidence for it or it wasn't enough time to find out the evidence. Nobody finds out about it. It gets killed by the gatekeepers, okay? It doesn't make it into the public domain.
In the modern technological environment, that's almost impossible, right?
Right. So during the John Edwards scandal, it seemed to be being replaced by Model 2. And Model 2 was that the blogosphere would be sort of the minor league tryout area where scandals would get tested. So you got the mainstream media up here, you know, New York Times, all the respectable people, and you have the sort of general populace, and the scandals bubble up, and then they get hashed out in the blogs, as the Edwards scandal sort of was, or in the National Enquirer, which is not respectable enough to be in the mainstream media. So there was this sort of intermediate level where sort of a scandal like the Edwards scandal would go, and it would decide, does this pass muster? And eventually, the Edwards scandal made it into the mainstream media when he gave a 60 Minutes interview. But before then, it was sort of being batted around in the National Enquirer and the blogs, including the Huffington Post and various other places. So that was the model. It was never quite perfectly, enacted, but that was sort of the obvious ecosystem that was happening, and there were two things that could undermine that. One is if the blogs stopped being distinct from the mainstream media, and two, if people stopped getting their news mainly from the mainstream media, then who cares whether the mainstream media endorses it or not? If people actually got most of their news from the blogs, that would be the ballgame. And both those things have happened now. The mainstream media looks more and more like a blog. They've started blogs, they've started podcasts, and it's not clear that they sort of dominate how people get news. People get news from all sorts of scurrilous blogs and Twitter feeds and all sorts of places. Yeah. So this model two, which was the model I sort of championed during the Edwards scandal, has collapsed. Okay?
Well,
so we're now left with, well, let me just quickly get it out.
Okay.
We're now left with Model 3, which is basically, we're all one big Petri dish, okay? There's the public, there's Twitter feeds, there's the mainstream media, there are a few blogs, I guess. But everybody is sort of listening to everybody else, and the public can get involved. The man on the street can tweet if they want. And some people might read his tweets. And we have the overlords of Twitter and Facebook trying to sort of censor things, but it's basically like, it's like a human body when there are various germs struggling for ascendancy. And so
you should pick up that telephone and tell him to give up. You don't want to answer the phone.
I really don't want to answer that phone. So,
Sorry.
Stop. So it's a question of whether the pathogen of the Hunter Biden scandal will beat out the pathogen of the people trying to kill the Hunter Biden pathogen. And it's just a battle. It's a law of the jungle. It's just a battle of who wins out.
I don't see
evidence comes into play, but it means everything gets discussed. So the Julie Swetnick allegation, it's Kavanaugh, which was, people were horrified that that was even discussed. Okay. That gets discussed. Everything gets discussed. It either gets shot down or it doesn't get shot down. That's model three. That's the model we're in.
Well, but
you can't be horrified that Julia Swetnick gets discussed, because she's going to get discussed and Hunter Biden's going to get discussed.
Well, it's being discussed, but it's not yet. I mean, where we are now is like the New York Times just did a story. I don't know if it's its first story, but it was the story took the form of what do we know about the provenance of this hard drive, kind of. And in the course of that, they quoted the Ukraine email, didn't mention the China stuff. And maybe that allows them to say, okay, we've done it. You know, you can't say we ignored the story, although it wasn't exactly a deep dive.
Right. But their goal is to kill the story that's bubbling around in all the non-New York Times stories. So one story in the New York Times ain't going to do it. In the gatekeeper model, that would kill the story.
You're right.
Now it doesn't kill the story. Okay.
I guess
the question is, does the Hunter Biden germ overwhelm the New York Times germs? And the way stories get traction is the press has to check them out. People have to check them out.
So wait,
you have to say, does Julia Swetnick make any sense? Does what Hunter Biden said make any sense? They have to do what we're doing now. And it's a question of what is the consensus that comes out in the end as to whether the story is accurate or not.
So does the New York Times, in this metaphor, are you sure it generates germs, or would it be more precise to say it generates antibodies?
Well, don't germs fight other germs? Isn't that what happens?
I guess what I don't understand is, I mean, you make it sound as if, okay, at one point, mainstream media had the power to just ignore things. Then once there were blogs and alternative media generally, as you noted, although Matt Drudge was not a classic blog, it was alternative media that forced the Clinton scandal.
But Matt Drudge would have been in the intermediate area, yeah.
Okay, so he forced the Monica Lewinsky scandal onto the agenda.
Right.
After the MSM had made the official decision to kill the story.
Right.
Fine, but in phase three, it sounds as if, I don't quite get it, because you talk as if the MSM has some kind of antibodies or agents it can deploy to destroy the story. I don't see what that is. It's not like the New York Times can intimidate bloggers or podcasters, or right, it can just try to ignore, and it has less power than it used to.
Well,
in ignoring
the tech powers certainly try to intimidate people. They're
yeah, but
banning
that was a
people.
Streisand effect. That didn't work.
Well, we don't know if it works. We know that initially, you know, hits went up when they banned it, but we don't know over the long term it might have had a suppressive effect. Twitter can ban you. The New York Post is still banned.
Well, okay,
up the story. That's intimidation. Okay,
Facebook
can demonetize you. That's intimidation.
Okay, fine. But the New York Times can't. New York Times can't. And you've been talking.
Yes, they can say this is Russian disinformation.
Well, they can make that claim.
It's now pretty clear that the Russian disinformation angle for the actual emails, unless this guy Bobolinsky is also a Russian agent, that's bullshit. But we can have the mainstream media going Russian disinformation. Right. You're a Russian agent.
Right.
For some reason, last week, all my friends started saying, you're a Russian agent. Why are you a Russian agent? Okay. That's pretty intimidating. I don't want to be a Russian agent.
Well, right. So, and by the way, that can be effective even if the claim isn't that these emails are inauthentic. The claim can be, look, they were hacked by Russians to influence our election. Do you want to participate in that? Or the claim can be, they were hacked by Russia. These are real, but you should beware of further emails because those may be fabricated. That can assume a lot of forms, but okay. So you're saying that, the New York Times has the power to stigmatize people who spread the information.
Right.
Is that it?
I'm also saying the New York Times doesn't have as much power as it used to have. A, because its weapons are limited, and B, because not that many people get their news from the New York Times anymore. Remember, the New York Times used to have its power because they set the agenda for the evening news. So not only because everybody, all the gatekeepers in the evening news shows read the New York Times, and the New York Times decided what was important, that then the evening news, which had a stranglehold on the national consciousness, would put on the air, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That model is dead. The evening news isn't that important anymore, and the New York Times only has so many readers, and they all tend to be people on the left anyway, on the American left. So it's a combination of those two factors.
Yeah, I mean, I think there has been an attempt by the establishment to try to stigmatize the spreading of this, and I think the Russia angle has been the angle, and Biden reprised that during the debate. I guess I'm, as far as your model goes, I'm not sure there's such a clear difference between phase two and phase three. It seems to me, I don't know what's happened here that couldn't have happened in phase two, I guess. Like,
well,
couldn't we be roughly?
Phase two, it was sort of legitimate for the Times to not address the Hunter Biden emails and leave it to the blogs to figure out whether it was real enough before it even deigned to talk about it, like the Edwards sex scandal. You would not have found the Edwards sex scandal discussed. In Model 3, the argument is, no, they really have to get in and put their reporters and on assessing the validity of basically every rumor because they're a player the same way everybody else is, and there's no, you can't say, well, we'll let the other people hash it out.
Well, I guess I would say in phase two, if there was enough pressure emanating from the blogosphere, they would have to deal with the story, as you would agree.
Well, that's what happened. That's
right. I'm not sure the thing is so different now. I mean, did the New York Times even do a story on this until this one from a couple of days ago? The Washington Post did an early story, a very cautious story. How do we know the New York Times' hand hasn't been forced by various things in alternative right-wing media, including the distribution of this Bobolinsky story or whatever. I don't know.
Well, it has. We were in the Model 3 now, but it took.
I don't see how
forever.
That's not Model 2 is all.
It took forever in Model 2 for the New York Times to be forced to cover the Edwards story. It basically took Edwards confessing on 60 Minutes.
Maybe this is just Model 2 plus Filer Faster thesis. Anyway, if I were trying to, I mean, first of all, you know, you were saying.
Don't be skeptical of my models, Bob.
Okay. It's a great model. And I would recommend that everyone subscribe to your news letter. And I'm sure it'll be a stronger piece for having, withstood my bracing yet constructive skepticism. But, you know, On the issue of, like, I mean, right now I'm feeling like I'm kind of fine with this story being successfully suppressed by the establishment. And it gets back to the fact that, like, you were saying, well, wait, we've been told Joe Biden is decent. If that's not the reason to elect him, there's no reason to elect him. That's not my reason. My reason is Donald Trump is an existential threat to the Republic. I don't think that's an exaggeration. I'm not saying the chances are more than 50% that will never recover from a second term, but I think they're more than 10%. I think he's a real threat. He's virtually, you know, I think he comes close to being at least a kind of metaphorical embodiment of evil in my book, if not an embodiment of evil. And I think, you know, what's going on now is a lot of people in the MSM feel the same way, and I'm not sure I can lecture them. I feel like lecturing them on the need to apply the same rules all the time. I mean, there are times of threat. And now, to take an extreme example, and no, I'm not comparing Trump to Hitler, but just to ask you whether there are cases in which, you know, suppressing things would be legit. If you were in Germany in the 30s, and there was some story that Hitler was going to use to push himself over the threshold to enduring power, and no, I'm not comparing him to Trump again, but would you say, yeah, if I'm controlling the MSM, I do that? I mean, are there any circumstances?
For sure, but this isn't that case, Bob, as you admit.
As I said, all we're establishing is that there are.
So what's the point?
Well, it's like the old joke. You know, we've already established what you are. Now we're just haggling over the price. You probably heard that joke, right? The point is, we've already established that there's a spectrum here. At one end, we would both say no, they shouldn't suppress anything. At the other end, we would both say yes. And
some would call it a slippery slope, not a spectrum.
But you're acknowledging there's a slope. That's my point. I mean, that's the point of throwing out an extreme example of that kind is to establish that, okay, then we've got to start arguing about where on the continuum you draw the line. What about Mussolini? What about, and so on?
First, I guess I would say that there's, it's hard to see what's going to come of a second Trump term. But I would say there's also an existential threat. As you know, I think the Biden's open borders policy is an existential threat of a sort on the other side too.
Well, it would not be open borders. Come on.
No, I think it's very, very close to open borders. The old position, established position, was we're for comprehensive immigration reform, which was an amnesty for the 11.5 million and tougher enforcement so the 11.5 million doesn't attract more people who come here for the next amnesty, okay? The Democrats have dropped the enforcement part. Now it's just we want an amnesty and less enforcement, okay? So, and we want no deportation. So that's pretty close to saying, yes, come and overwhelm our borders.
If you think that's close, imagine an actual open borders policy. Anyone can come over and that would lead.
No, then we would rapidly look like Rio de Janeiro or Hong Kong.
In other words,
what
Biden policy would be nothing like open borders. I rest my case.
No, it's a spectrum.
Okay.
There's a lot of room to the open borders extreme than we are now.
There's a lot of room between the two.
And it would transform America in, you could say it's a good way, you could say it's a bad way. It would transform America.
Just to try to crystallize my position on Biden, it's like, it's conceivable that if the scandal is as big as Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon act as if it is, then I would say no. They shouldn't be suppressing the story because, for one thing, as you said, then he becomes president. It's huge. He's a criminal. Blah blah blah. But if it is the case that what we mean is, well, Joe Biden didn't do anything illegal, but he's about as corrupt as a whole lot of American politicians. Can we live with that in a president? I'm like, shit, yeah. Compared to what we got now,
no,
much better for the country.
I don't think it vitiates the case for Biden. I just think it dramatically degrades the case for Biden. That's all.
You could
still be for Biden.
If what? What would vitiate?
If he's as corrupt as the worst possible case of the scandal is, you could still vote for Biden.
I still would, actually.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as saying, that if I were running the New York Times and knew it was that bad. Anyway.
But at some point there becomes a degree of intellectual dishonesty when people like John Alter are saying you shouldn't cover this story because it's bullshit. And then they turn around and say, well, I don't care if it's bullshit, because Trump is so awful. You have to admit that there's a difference between that, and you shouldn't go around lying and saying it's bullshit if it's not bullshit. At some point, the degradation of dialogue becomes so great that becomes an existential threat to the Republic. So.
Well, I would say that if you ask me why the betting markets have Biden at around 67 and Nate Silver at around 87, I think the betting markets, in fact, I think they may even be underestimating the chances that this thing could grow significantly and get legs and wind up in the MSM. On the other hand, like I said, Yeah, I will say, like, I've been listening to Bannon podcast, and it's like masochism. It's painful. I mean, I keep not. It's like after our podcast last week, I woke up in the middle of the night, like you were making a big deal of the emails, thinking, "Oh shit, what if this is like the hacked emails last time, and it's a drip, 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 and there really is a lot of stuff in there." Now I will say, as far as actual emails, virtually nothing has come out since then. Now there is, as you know, we should talk about this in the Parrot Room, if at all, but this text message where Hunter supposedly suggests he's being indecent around a 14-year-old girl. I think that's not the correct reading of it. Giuliani's acting as if it is.
Well, who cares about that? We're not.
Well, right.
Like I say, we're not electing Hunter president.
Oh, but you got to understand. Giuliani says that text is grounds for indicting Joe Biden.
Well, Giuliani's crazy.
He is crazy. I was going to ask you, like, what is the deal with Giuliani?
I don't know. He had a prostate operation. He took a lot of drugs, medical drugs.
Now, Michael Cohen says that he has a drinking problem, but when he's on the Bannon podcast, which admittedly tapes in the morning, he doesn't seem drunk. On the other hand, you do, like on Monday or something, at the end of the Bannon podcast, they say, we've got a big story tomorrow, 10 a.m., tune in. It's going to be big. Okay, so they have Giuliani at 10 a.m. He discloses absolutely nothing, and at the end they say, so are you going to break something big within the next 24, 48 hours? He says, yes, but tomorrow when I'm on Maria, whatever her name, Bartolama, whatever, but I'm going to have this stuff organized. I'm going to have this stuff organized. I mean, that is, I'm not saying he's an alcoholic, but that is the kind of thing you get from alcoholics. Like, yeah, I've got this great thing. It turned out it was this text, the salacious text thing, but nothing else. So I don't know. Giuliani is a puzzle because he could have gone down with a very favorable, like, obituary and Wikipedia entry, but he's going down as a crazy person.
I thought his response to that was actually somewhat profound.
Response to what?
They asked him, why are you doing this? Why don't you protect your legacy as the man who saved New York? And he says, too many people are running around wasting their lives protecting their legacy. Fuck my legacy. That was like almost a literal quote.
That's good.
It is true that there are too many people running around Washington terrified of doing something because they have a good legacy and they don't want to fuck around with it.
Too many journalists, too. But not us, damn it. Not us. Just on the evidence we're living in a simulation front, like the day after Giuliani releases these texts intimating something about Hunter Biden and a 14-year-old girl, the Borat story breaks, intimating something about Giuliani and something about a 15-year-old girl and him having his hand down his pants. That seemed
like a setup. It was obviously a setup, but I mean,
sure, but the fact that it was in the vault.
They untucked his shirt. She's tucking his shirt back into his pants, so he tucks his shirt in his pants. That's all the video apparently shows. She's not a 15-year-old girl. She's a 24-year-old girl.
I know.
He's not told she's 15 years old.
Yes,
until
he is.
After Borat comes on the set, it's all bullshit.
Okay, Mickey, get out of Giuliani defense mode. All I'm saying, not that I'd ever accuse you of being a Giuliani defender.
I said
he was crazy,
but that video was bullshit.
It's not evidence
we're living in a simulation. It's evidence that Borat has some sense of PR.
All I'm saying is that they happen to have in the vault this clip that would generate a headline that's about Rudy Giuliani and his hand down his pants and a 15-year-old girl the day after he lodges this allegation against Hunter Biden. It was just pretty weird. That's all I'm saying.
That's not in the movie? That's an outtake?
I think it's in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not in the vault. It's in the movie that is on.
It was already done. It wasn't. The angle wasn't generated in response. If the whole thing was fabricated in response to the Giuliani thing, then we wouldn't be living in a simulation. But we are.
That's so weak, Bob. Something happens, and everybody else who could get PR off it, like a Remora, comes out with their relevant clips, and it happened that Borat had a relevant clip.
Just amazing how relevant it was. So, give us your prediction on what on like. Do you think I'm right? I mean, Bannon and Giuliani are like 24/7 on this Hunter Biden thing. They seem to think it's the only hope. Do you agree? It is the real hope.
My friend John Ellis, who writes another newsletter for Substack, had a larger, non-scandalous frame that Trump should have followed, which is, I'm the strong horse, Biden's the weak horse. I'm strong on immigration. I'm strong on, trade. I'm strong on, A, B, C, D, E. He could have basically run through his whole platform, and it would have jibed with the impression you got in the debate, which is that, whether you like him or not, Trump is the stronger figure, and the general impression that a lot of people don't like Trump, but they might vote for him because he's a stronger figure. Okay? That would not have involved the scandal. It might have been a compelling campaign theme. It's getting a little late for that since all the debates are now over. So what does Trump have left? This may be the best arrow that Trump has left. I agree.
I think so,
The other thing we're glossing over is the Senate. It's possible that the effect of the scandal and will be to stabilize the race enough so that Trump doesn't drag down the Republican Senate, mm-hmm. which seems to be coming down to races in places like North Carolina, where it's sort of too close to call, and there's a sex scandal involving Cunningham, the Democrat, and the possibility for various upsets, like the possibility that James in Michigan, I believe, who nobody thought had a chance, seems to be within striking range, and Jamie Harrison in South Carolina seems, on the other side, seems to be in striking range of Lindsey Graham. So it's possible that the main effect of the scandal will be to deny the Democrats control of the Senate. I still think there are odds on favors to do that. But Peggy Noonan made an interesting point, which is if you're Joe Biden, you don't want to win the Senate, because once the Democrats take the Senate, it'll be a runaway train. You won't have any control over it. The Democrats will say, okay, we have the Senate. We can get rid of the filibuster. We can pass all this stuff. And there's no way Joe Biden says, no, we don't want to do that. Whereas, if he doesn't have control of the Senate, he can say, sorry, we can't do Medicare for all. We can't do a full-fledged amnesty, open borders deal because Mitch McConnell won't go for it. The control of the Senate may be more important than who wins the White House, in part because, from my point of view, Biden is moving to the left on trade, to the populist side on trade already. So mm-hmm. it's not clear that he's going to be that much worse than Trump. I think it will be worse, but it's not like he is, Bill Clinton or Mickey Cantor. They've moved to the populist side on trade. And on immigration, Trump is moving to the establishment side. He didn't jump on Biden for suggesting his amnesty. He clearly has had in the back of his mind the idea that once I build the wall and have placated the anti-immigration side, I can sell out and have an amnesty and placate the corporate side. So Trump isn't that good on immigration anymore anyway. So the candidates are sort of closer than we thought, and what matters is who wins the Senate. So at this point, the Senate may be as important a ballgame as the presidency.
I really doubt Biden doesn't want to win the Senate. I mean, every president wants a legacy, and he'd like to significantly improve health care. And
you doubt that Biden wants to lose the Senate?
Yeah, I doubt that.
I don't think Peggy was saying that. I think she was saying that it's in his interest to lose the Senate.
Well, maybe.
And but
now, do you think, how much significance do you attribute to the early voting? So, here's some numbers. The day before the debate, even, in, look at some swing states, in Michigan, 39% as many people as voted in 2016 had already voted. Wisconsin, 37%. North Carolina, 50.
Well, it only matters if it affects the turnout. I mean, you can only vote once, right? So you bank all your votes And then all the other side's votes come in on election day. It just...
Well, you're... I mean, I think the effect is probably limited because presumably the people who voted are people who were likely to turn out in any event and were unlikely to change their minds. On the other hand, to the extent that there are any people in there who might have changed their minds or might have decided to sit this one out, you're inoculating yourself against bad news, such as a burgeoning, you know, Hunter Biden email scandal. You're inoculating yourself against horrible weather. I mean, it was, what, 12 years ago that epic rain in Ohio suppressed turnout? You know, it seems to me not it gives me a good feeling. I mean, I like to see these numbers, although when I reflect on it, I think, you know, maybe don't mean that much.
They're starting to turn around even in Florida, though.
In terms of who is voting, you mean?
Yeah, the Republicans are catching up. So,
yeah, Florida is not a clear case. I think it was Michigan that was, in terms of not just the percentage of Democrats who had requested ballots, but in terms of percentage of those who requested them who had returned them, one of those swing states where there was a huge difference. Now, Pennsylvania, only 21% of people have voted. So that I worry about Pennsylvania from Biden's point of view more than some of the others.
We have other possible topics to talk about.
We've been talking a while, Mickey. If they're parrot room worthy, we could save them for then. What?
One thing that's usually not parrot room worthy is the pandemic.
Yeah. Let's do talk about that.
The HME, the University of Washington, came out with this estimate that it just seems total bullshit. 200,000 more people might die by the end of the year, unless we do these other things, in which case it must be lower. Well, duh. You know, if we go around sneezing on each other, 200 people are going to die, 1,000 people might die. And if we take super elaborate precautions, fewer people will die. I thought that model had been totally discredited already because it predicted a bunch of shit that never happened. So why is it generating headlines today other than the fact that it helps Joe Biden?
It does seem like it's overdone, but I would say that if you'll recall, last week I said cases are up sharply, hospitalizations up sharply. If history is any guide, within the next week or two, deaths will start rising. Well, that seems to have already happened. For the previous 2 weeks, death rate had, you know, 7-day rolling average of deaths had been between kind of 650 and 700. Yesterday it was 786, the day before that 755, the day before that 728, the day before that 708. Seems to be a clear increase happening. It'll probably be more pronounced in like Wisconsin, an important state. So, I mean, yeah, I don't.
Produce 200,000 deaths by the end of the year, it has to produce 3,000 deaths a day.
As I said, I don't buy it. My point is that we could well, it looks like this is going to be working against Trump, assuming he, in important states, continues to be the guy who's getting the blame for it. I think the death rate, it's been, I mean, we're talking, if you just extrapolate from the last 3-4 days, we're talking about a very clear upsurge. And if that continues, that's going to be a big story in a week. And remember, the MSM is thirsting for stories to drown out the story you would like to see.
No, I understand. No, I didn't see a clear trend in the national death data. The cases are obviously exploding.
In California,
our cases are exploding and the death rate isn't going up so that rapidly. So I just, yes, COVID will be a big story. This HME model just seemed ridiculous that it's still getting attention. I thought people had said, you know, let's stop paying attention to models 6 months ago.
Yeah. No, all I'm saying, last time that the daily death number as averaged over 7 days was over 705 was September. And the last 4 days in order, starting 4 days ago, 708, 728, 755, 786. That's not good.
But it's not 3,000.
No, I know I'm not paying any attention to that model at all. So what about your isn't it time to acknowledge that you're voting for Trump? You haven't officially said that.
I'll probably vote for Trump. I live in California.
That's a cop out. So your vote doesn't matter.
No,
give
I would probably I would probably vote for Trump, even if I didn't live in California. I mean, my deal outcome is Trump gets elected. This borders threat disappears, and then Trump is immediately indicted and removed from office. I'm not looking forward to a second Trump term, but the most immediate threat is the threat of this immigration thing. If also I was sure that the Democrats weren't going to take the Senate, I would probably vote for Biden. But I'm not sure of that. I think the Democrats are going to take the Senate.
Okay.
So, by the way, it's a defensive vote. I do not see the existential threat to our democracy of a second Trump term. I think he could be quite bad, but I don't see the existential threat to our democracy.
It's not necessarily the conventional argument, but anyway,
the idea that Amy Coney Barrett is going to pose an existential
I'm not talking about that at all.
She's obviously going to break Republicans' hearts. Her destiny.
I don't know about that, but that has nothing to do with Trump. She's a conventional Republican selection. She has nothing to do with Trump. She's right down the Republican alley. If it was any other Republican president, you would still see somebody like her.
I'm not sure of that.
Oh, why? What's so distinctively Trump-esque about her?
She's more anti-Roe than certainly a guy like Jeb Bush would appoint. Jeb Bush would have appointed Kavanaugh, and he probably might have appointed Gorsuch, but Amy Coney Barrett would be considered an extreme step for a Jeb Bush, Amy Coney Barrett, because she's so anti-Roe and so anti-abortion.
No, I think, I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. So we've been going on a long time by our standards. We should do ritual self-promotion. If people want to support us, they can go to patreon.com/parrotroom. That is, if they support people who are discussing today what the mainstream media is stigmatizing people for discussing and may or may not wind up discussing tomorrow, they can support us. By the way, if I were going to stigmatize people for talking about this, it wouldn't be about the Russians. It would be about, like, do you want to, like, be in bed with Rudy Giuliani? I mean, that guy is so sleazy. He and Steve Bannon. The greatest thing about Trump losing would be I could totally quit listening to that podcast.
I think people should earmark their donations saying you only get this if you stop listening to Steve Bannon. You're listening to Steve Bannon way too much. Who cares about Steve Bannon?
Hey, Steve Bannon and Rudy brought us this thing. And by the way, Steve Bannon has probably now got secured his pardon. Certainly, if this winds up pushing Trump over the finish line and to victory, he's got his pardon. He's probably got it anyway. This was a Steve Bannon, Rudy Giuliani production. The hack, whatever it was, it's Steve Bannon. I was prescient to start listening to that podcast painful months ago.
Okay. Well, maybe it's the punishment is inherent in your listening to it. So,
but we're happy to establish a higher Patreon tier for for people who don't want me to talk about Steve Bannon. But no, you can support us. You can subscribe to your letter, Cal's Files, mine, the Non-Zero newsletter. You can follow us on Twitter. Robert Ryder, Cal's Mickey. What else?
As you know, I don't like the self-promotional.
Yeah, right.
Coda, so.
No, you just like the fruits of it. You just like the fruits of it. You just like to use the proceeds to go, do whatever it is you do with your parrot.
But I would just like to contrast the sums that we get from the parrot room with the sums that Hunter Biden feels he has to get to live on. I mean, where is the disconnect here? Why do people feel they need $5 million or $1 million a year just to get by? It's utterly bizarre unless you have a huge cocaine habit, or you have five ex-wives, or, you know, or something.
It seems that way, and yet a more or less universal feature of human nature seems to be that the more money people have, the more they want. Isn't that funny?
I noticed he was driving a Porsche Panamera, which is a $100,000 car. I thought that was going to be the end of Joe Biden, is when people saw the Porsche Panamera.
Well, Hunter's not the one running for office, but
still, okay. They're Panamera people. They're not Amtrak people.
That's true. Okay. Anyway. So any more, you can't think of any more self-promotion?
No, we have promotion for the Parrot Room. We have some Epstein stuff for the Parrot Room.
Oh yeah, Ghislaine.
I don't know if it's that, but we have some. There is some Epstein.
You have Jeffrey Epstein stuff,
and
and I have. You know, it's funny. There's a joke in last week's Parrot Room. I asked you if you had heard. I told you the punchline. You said you hadn't. I said I'll tell it in a future Parrot Room. It has perfect relevance, uncanny relevance, to the Jeffrey Toobin thing, which, by the way, I think could use a little more examination than we've given it in the non-Parrot Room.
Okay, I thought I've gotten all my gloating in the disguise of not gloating out here, but
well, we still have
some more of it.
We have
Toobin-Freude.
We have at least the joke, yes, and
we have Toobin-Freude.
More Toobin-Freude. Okay, so we will see you. We will see you there.
There's also some serious stuff that we haven't discussed, but we can do that in the Parrot Room too.
Totally. You want to give us a tease? What are we going to talk? What's the serious thing?
Oh, some foreign policy stuff. Some makeup of the future Biden administration.
Yeah. Okay. And can I just say? I mean, one reason I'll be glad when the election's over is we can talk about more stuff like that and less about horse race politics, which I don't really like. But there it is.
Okay. I guess I'm hoping that there'll be plenty to talk about after the election.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can, philosophical conundrums. Why is there something instead of nothing? You know, we'll keep him entertained.
That's always good for hits. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. See you around.
See ya.